Pleased to have you along here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here. Glad to have you along as we talk attention deficit disorder in adults to begin our program. Dr. Jeff Anders, our guest, clinical assistant professor of psychiatry at the University of Wisconsin-Madison Health Services. He's been with us in the past. It's been quite a while, though. I'm just glad to have him back to talk some more about ADHD, what it is, how do we deal with it, and certainly to answer your questions as we move along. If you'd like to join us, the number to call 1-800-642-1234. In Madison, it's 263-1890. Give us a call. We'd be pleased to get you on the air. Dr. Jeff Anders, welcome back. Nice to have you with us again.
Thanks, Larry. It's good to see you.
I said at the beginning of the show, just before the newscast, that I thought the incidence, or at least the reporting of ADHD, has increased over the last many years. And is that a true statement? Or
I think the true incidence of ADHD has not changed over probably the last two centuries, mm-hmm. but the amount of people who feel, I think, less stigmatized to be able to look into this disorder, the amount of knowledge and people, the amount that people know about this now, has led to increased prevalence or people knowing that they have a problem that may be treatable.
Maybe we should define it. What really is attention deficit hyperactive disorder?
Right. The moniker, as you just said, is ADHD, or attention deficit hyperactivity disorder. There's two subtypes: inattentive type and hyperactive impulsive subtype. What it is really the nuts and bolts is it's a disorder of so-called executive function, which is really the ability of somebody to plan and sequence a task easily. Mm-hmm. And people with ADHD get off track. They don't have the activation in their certain parts of their brains to be able to focus on an important task, and their filter, if you will, is broken. They receive stimuli like we all do from all of our senses and all of our other parts of our brain that gives us our thoughts. But they are unable to filter out the things that they have to attend to at the moment, and will basically just be caught in a barrage of thoughts and stimuli, and respond to the one that's most stimulating, not to the one that they need to attend to from a functional standpoint.
And you said there are two. There's compulsive, and what's the other one?
Well, hyperactive, impulsive, and inattentive. So
okay.
Hyperactive / impulsive and inattentive. Right.
I had a student some time back who had to write pretty much write everything down. She happened to be a very good student, but she broke her arm and was having to be her writing arm, and her grades just plummeted on the next series of exams because the way that she learned was to write down the things that she was reading in order to remember them. And then her grades went back up mm-hmm. When she was able to write again. Would that be an example of it or not? Would that be something different?
I would probably look along the lines of maybe a learning weakness or even a learning disorder with somebody like that. It's possible, but frequently people who I see, adults, young adults primarily, because I work in college health, who have ADHD, find that just writing something down is not the ticket. They end up, when they're writing, they're doodling, and when they're writing, they're thinking about other things, and when they're writing, they're really missing the point of the lecture or, you know, what's coming at them. And so just writing down does not usually do it. People with learning disorders may have specific areas of real weakness where they may have auditory processing problems, where, you know, something doesn't work between the sounds that are hitting their ears and what their thoughts then are, or basically breaking that down into notes. And maybe they have to write each and every word down, and then can go over that by reading it, which they're maybe much stronger at after the lecture.
Yeah, I think in this case, the person had to write down what the points of her book that she was reading, that she would write them down after she read them in order to sort of try and retain them. So that's how she did. And obviously, a female, does ADHD commonly affect males more or females more? Is about the same.
Well, in terms of the subtypes, Larry, there's the hyperactive impulsive type mainly affects boys by a 2-to-1 ratio. And I say boys because for all people, ADHD is a developmental disorder that has to have started in childhood. Girls don't get as much of the hyperactive impulsive type, but the inattentive type is probably equal gender-wise.
What's the screening process for this disorder?
Well, what it involves is, first of all, seeing a clinician who has expertise in ADHD and developmental disorders, and that can be a psychiatrist, a psychologist. We're talking about adults, so but it could obviously, you know, because it's a childhood onset disorder, you know, someone could present as an adolescent or a child and be seen by their pediatrician. Primary care physicians, certainly many of them have expertise to diagnose and treat ADHD, as do a variety of mental health clinicians as well.
Do you think that, you know, for adults, are there a lot of people out there who may be afflicted with it but don't realize that they have it?
Very, very much so. It's become I don't want to say fashionable, but much more looked at as a neurodevelopmental and biologically and genetically based disorder, and people are more comfortable sometimes looking into something that may be wrong with them. Numbers wise, probably in the range of 4-6% of adults have ADHD, and many of them, most of them, probably still aren't recognized and treated adequately.
It must be really difficult then for holding jobs or doing that, you know, just doing work.
Very much. The research is very clear that ADHD affects people negatively in a variety of ways in their life, from driving to having driving accidents, to academics and school and lowered performance, to a greater number of jobs in their lives, to greater number of relationships and failed relationships in their lives. It's a really, it affects people in a kind of global functional way.
We're talking with Dr. Jeff Anders today, a clinical professor of psychiatry at the UW-Madison Health Services, about attention deficit disorder in adults. If you would like to join in, maybe some experiences of your own or someone you know have a question about it, give us a call at 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or in the Madison area, reach us at 263-1890, 263-1890. We'd be happy to get you on and talk with you. So give us a call. Does it usually start in childhood, or does it, I think you said,
yes,
typically?
By definition, it has to start before the age of 7. Now, there's been some research that shows that that's probably a little bit rigid, and that ADHD can possibly have an onset a bit later than that. But for sure, you know, childhood, elementary school, taking the other tact, if someone presents with so-called adult onset ADHD or even mid-adolescence onset of symptoms, you really need to look elsewhere, that it has to be a long-standing pervasive type problem since childhood. And frequently, you know, people will show the symptoms, you know, between the ages of 3 and 7 quite universally.
Well, let's take some calls. Sandy in Oshkosh, we'll give you a chance. Hi, Sandy. Thanks for calling.
Hi, thank you. I have a comment and a question. First of all, my son was diagnosed with ADD, not ADHD, and once he started medications, made a huge difference. And then I also had the same problem. I didn't realize it, but I've been treated as well, and it's made a tremendous difference in my life. But what's the difference between just ADD and ADHD? That's my question.
Okay.
Right. This disorder has gone through a large number of names over literally the past 50 to 100 years. Initially, it was described in the literature after several children developed encephalitis and had symptoms. But it's been called things like minimal brain dysfunction, and probably in the 80s, it was called ADD, and then it is called ADHD. I understand where you're coming from, Sandy, that you said your son does not have ADHD, but technically speaking, we'd say he has ADHD inattentive type.
Okay.
Even though he doesn't have the hyperactive, impulsive type symptoms I believe you're suggesting.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thanks very much for calling. And Sandy mentioned the medications.
Right.
And there are some medications that can work.
Yes, and medications, I would have to say, are the primary treatment for ADHD. It's been shown that medications can, for a number of people, make a really huge difference in their ability to attend to things, concentrate, focus. For people with the hyperactive subtype, to feel like they're able to sit still without fidgeting, blurting out answers. And medications can help in academic, vocational, and interpersonal and social settings. And they are the mainstay of treatment at this point.
Hmm. Kathy in Green Bay, it's your turn. Hi, Kathy.
Okay, I have ADD and I'm driving and using my cell phone. And I just had to turn off the radio. But anyway, a comment on going to pediatricians.
Okay.
When I used to be a teacher, people would make comments about, oh yeah, you know, now they're just giving pills to everyone and da-da-da-da-da. And I think if that is indeed happening, it's happening when a child goes only to their pediatrician. And I think it would be much wiser to go to the pediatrician just as a starting point and then go to a psychiatrist. But my big question is, how do adults with ADD, like, get it together to get to work in the morning, for example? Mm-hmm. My example.
Okay. All right. Well, I'll tell you what. Turn your radio back on and hang up and turn your radio back
okay.
on and listen, all right?
All right.
Thanks, Kathy.
Okay. Kathy's out there multitasking, and you know, that's difficult to do. If something happened on the road, she'd probably, you know, be harder for her to focus on that if she's doing multiple things at once with ADHD. There was two questions.
First one was about pediatrician. She thought a person should go to a pediatrician and then to a psychiatrist.
Okay. Thanks, Larry. Yeah. I think that especially in some communities in our country, people are over-medicated. And Larry and I were talking just a bit before the show that in our, you know, you could say hyper-competitive society, some people have a real interest in evening the playing field to the degree that if their son or daughter shows any kind of weakness, you know, academically, they'd want their son or daughter to be medicated and to have every chance to be, you know, right up there with Johnny or Susie in their class. I think it's real important, although this is a neurobiological disorder and medications probably make the most difference. It's real important to take a holistic approach, and parents need to be educated. We're talking about adult ADHD, so people with ADHD need to make themselves educated about this. And involving schools, teachers, and parents, both to maximize people's strengths and minimize people's weaknesses is real important in this disorder. Also, people in educational settings especially can get certain academic accommodations, for instance, extended test times, quiet test rooms, which can do serve to level the playing field to some degree. And a combination of these approaches is the best.
Well, what about her other question that related to just coping, getting up in time to go to work in the morning was the example she used, but...
Right. It's real difficult, and there's multiple things coming at us, you know, in the morning from the moment we get up. I haven't counted, but many thoughts and stimuli are coming at us in the morning and throughout the day, and you know, getting through everything and getting out the door is a real challenge. The importance of time management and task management and improving time management is something that people with ADHD can and should really try to look at. Look at your day hour by hour, minute by minute, and really write down what you're doing. And talk to somebody, a professional, who can go through that with you and look at where your inefficiencies lie and where you can, you know, maximize things. Some people with ADHD sometimes come in and say, oh, but I write lists, but I don't look at the lists, you know. they don't, you know, do on the list what they need to do and prioritize. They go to what hits them first or is most stimulating. It can be a real challenge. A lot of times from the medication end of things, we talk about, you know, people or recommend that people take the medication early upon wakening, because it can kick in within 30 to 60 minutes and really help with that process in the morning.
And as pediatrician, psychiatrist business, you see a psychiatrist, is that help?
Probably, I'd say, on the whole, psychiatrists probably have more expertise, certainly with adult ADHD. But in the childhood realm, I think child psychiatrists, I'd say, have the most expertise. And then I'd say that pediatricians and adult psychiatrists typically have some expertise. Some are very knowledgeable about this, and others are minimally, both adult psychiatrists and pediatricians.
Talking today with Dr. Jeff Anders of the University of Wisconsin-Madison about attention deficit hyperactive disorder. I'm Larry Mueller. Jim Packard, our producer, you're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking attention deficit hyperactivity disorder with Dr. Jeff Anders, clinical professor of psychiatry at the UW-Madison Health Services. Glad to have you listening in. Dr. Anders, we had a caller online. We lost the call, but Jim Packard had put a little note that said, "My friend is driving me crazy." That was the comment from the caller. And without knowing any more, can you comment on that?
Sure. I guess the question is, was the caller had concern about themselves or about their friend? I'm not sure. I can say that it's pretty common that people with ADHD with the hyperactive type will butt into conversations, will have to move around and not be able to do things quietly a lot of the times, and have to be doing things that are quite stimulating, and can be in your face, impulsive, have temper and anger problems. People with the inattentive subtype of ADHD, and a lot of people can have a combined type as well. People with inattentive type will have problems with being on time frequently. They will not have completed a task. If you're on a committee or trying to do something with somebody, they'll really be lagging behind in doing what needs to be done with attending to the tasks. In conversations, they'll be drifting off, and you'll say, "Joe, aren't you listening to what I was saying?" And they'll be elsewhere, and they may pretend they were listening, like we all do sometimes. But
right. But
people with ADHD it's notorious that they have real problems in conversations and social conversations. Sometimes patients will tell me that in a group conversation, they'll feel like they're just behind. They don't know what the group has been talking about because they have been physically there, but other thoughts and sensations and noises, et cetera, have been hitting them, and they haven't been able to focus on the conversation at hand.
Mm. Well, so from a friend's perspective or even a family member's perspective, how do you react to people who are in this situation?
Well, it's important to make people aware of this. And again, it may have nothing to do with having ADHD. All of the things I talked about are common human human traits. But when it's a more pervasive problem, when this always happens, and when there's not other, you know, confounding variables or factors that can cause this, as can other mental health disorders, medical disorders, other psychosocial stressors, can affect people's focus and concentration, obviously. So I would say that, you know, it should be looked at and explored further if you notice this. Also, the fact that one of the callers mentioned that, you know, her son or daughter was diagnosed, as was she. And this is a highly heritable disorder. It's in fact, it's probably one of the most mental health and medical, medically genetically passed on disorders, and there's a huge heritable component. And as you know, you can say that the apple doesn't fall far from the tree with ADHD. Mm-hmm. It's pretty likely that someone else in the family is gonna have this.
Mm-hmm. Bob in Lancaster, I think, may have had a question relating to that. Bob, hi.
Hi. I could two things. One, taking it farther, has anybody worked out the specific type of inheritance, for example, autosomal dominant or X-linked?
No. It hasn't been shown to be, you know, that simple yet. I don't know if it will be. It's certainly, you know, genetic, but there hasn't been shown specific genes, or to the degree where it's, you know, specifically sex linked or autosomal dominant or recessive, et cetera.
And second part, I'm an ophthalmologist. I just happen to have the noon hour off, and I was calling. Has anybody studied a relationship between, say, farsightedness and ADHD? Because anecdotally, a lot of ophthalmologists have noted that.
Huh, that's very interesting, and I haven't heard that before. Is that older people with presbyopia?
Oh, no, no. It just means, as you know, if somebody's nearsighted, and this is true, they tend to do well in school, you know, and get good grades. And people who are farsighted, at best, you know, they'll be good at sports, but sometimes they tend to be the kind of hyperactive, and we know they'll kind of come in and take over the exam room.
Huh. That's very interesting, and I certainly would, you know, I'm going to look into that when we're done here. But no, I haven't heard that. I haven't heard that at all. You're talking about, you know, the connection with sports and people with farsightedness doing well, and, you know, that you've noticed. And, you know, I think that we should also mention that ADHD, many centuries, you know, and eons ago, may have been a very it may have been a positive attribute to have, that in a fight or flight, you know, hunter gatherer type society, responding to stimuli out in your environment was crucially important, and paying attention to a book by Tolstoy was not important at all. And this may have been something that was a positive characteristic to have, and still is for some jobs and professions, absolutely.
Yeah. Thanks, Bob.
All righty. Thank you.
Thank you, Bob.
Appreciate it. Dave in Middleton, it's your turn. Hi, Dave.
Hi. I'm someone that hasn't been diagnosed with it, but just everything you're talking about sounds like something that I've dealt with pretty much my whole life. Two questions I have is, one, I do have insurance that covers me to go to the UW Health, so I would like to see if you could recommend someone that I could see about a diagnosis and treatment. Mm-hmm. And I guess that's probably the main question I have.
Okay.
Well, there's two routes with that. One would be to first consult with your primary care physician, and some primary care doctors have, like I said previously, have a lot of expertise in diagnosing and treating ADHD, and some know more, frankly, than I do, and psychiatrists do about this. So that might be an easy place to start, given that you probably have this insurance and have a identified primary care doc who you've seen before. If not, I would call the Department of Psychiatry. Again, if you have a specific, you know, insurance, UW Health, I'd call Department of Psychiatry here in Madison, and you can mention, you know, that you'd like to be seen about that, and that you'd like to be seen by one of the psychiatrists for a consultation and evaluation.
Mm-hmm. All right. Good luck, Dave.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot for calling. And Jean in La Crosse, you are next. Hi, Jean.
Hi. I'm calling because I am all of the above.
Yeah.
I believe. I mean, I'm always, my boyfriend's always telling me I'm always doing, he said, you just try to do 8,000 things in 1 second. And I am very backwards. Everything is backwards. Mm. And I didn't know if that is pertains to what the topic, or because I'm really scatterbrained. My attention span is awful. I just seem to be everything that you guys have said.
Mm. Well, what do you think?
Well, you certainly hit on, you know, some of the words that we hear and think of, you know, with that characterize people with ADHD, trying to do many things at once, being unable to prioritize what you want and really need to be doing at that time. I think you mentioned scatterbrain. That's a very common
concentration level is terrible. I mean, if I do try to do one thing, I'm always thinking about the next thing I'm going to do, and I'm not finishing what I'm, you know what I'm talking about.
Right, absolutely. Finishing what you should and need to be doing is a real problem. I've seen a lot of people who are very bright, people in college who say, oh, I got, you know, straight A's or A's and B's as a kid in elementary school, but I did it on the seat of my pants. I never finished homework. And you get the teacher reports and report cards from growing up, and it says things like, you know, Johnny was a really smart kid, did well on tests, but never got his homework in, couldn't finish projects, started things, couldn't finish them, had a disorganized desk. I want to stress that as human beings, we all have problems paying attention. There was an article in the Wisconsin State Journal on March 20th, for instance, about scattered minds and how we all don't pay attention to what we need to be paying attention to. For all I know, Larry right now is thinking about what he's going to have for lunch. But he's not thinking about so many other things probably that he's not listening to what we're saying, because he knows that he's a radio host and he has to, this is his one of his jobs, and he has to pay attention to this. And someone with ADHD would have greater difficulty in getting back to their job at hand. And
I'm kind of organized, but interrupting. I interrupt. My boyfriend's like, honey, you interrupt all the time. He said, you have to stop that. I interrupt people in mid-sentence, and I'm and it's embarrassing because I try to stop it, and I'm just...
Why do you think you do that?
I don't know. I think it's maybe because I'm afraid. A lot of times it's afraid I'm going to forget what I was going to say. Mm-hmm. So I just have to blurt it out.
Yeah. Okay.
I mean, I honestly don't know. I just know there's something wrong.
Well, Jean, what do you have for advice for her, Dr. Anders?
Well, I think it sounds like, you know, this is a possibility. You have to say to yourself, though, is this causing functional impairment in my life? It sounds like you're in your personal life. Yes, it is. But looking at, you know, educational and vocational life too, we have to look at this again globally. And for someone who's doing great at, you know, work and school and may have, you know, a problem in one area of their life. I'm not saying this is you.
Right.
I'm saying this more as a teaching point. But if you look at all areas, and if this is a problem in all areas of your life, then it should be looked at.
The learning aspect it is. It is. It's really hard for me to learn. Really hard for me to learn.
Yeah. Well, you talked about medications earlier, Dr. Anders. Would you advise Jean to talk to a psychiatrist, perhaps, and maybe medications are in her future?
Yeah, quite possibly. The first thing is certainly just to look if you know, to explore further if this is going on. And I would say for most people with ADHD who meet the criteria for having the disorder, medications probably should be, you know, something they should really think about.
Okay.
With my general practitioner?
Yes.
Okay.
I would start there.
Okay.
Sure.
Thank you so much.
No problem.
Thank you very much. Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it, Jean. And John in Stoughton, your turn. Hi, John.
Hi. I actually had a couple of points, and like 10 points, but I'm going to try to narrow down to what I feel are the most important ones. One is regarding... you know, like the cost of getting diagnosis. How expensive are we talking about for this sort of thing? That was one point. Probably a more important one in the fact that I have attention deficit disorder, just illustrated by the fact that I jumped around on my list, is about the emotional aspect of this disorder. There's so much, you know, I introduce myself as John from Stoughton. I'm neither John nor am I from Stoughton. and that illustrates just how much I, you know, I don't want anybody to know who I am and that I'd be calling and admitting to having this disorder.
Yeah.
You know, there's just such a stigma associated with admitting, you know, I'm not even certain I want to go in for testing because I don't want to know that, no, in fact, I don't have attention disorder. I'm just stupid. You know, there's that aspect of it.
Yeah.
Yeah. To answer both of the questions, Don, first of all, for the diagnosis of ADHD has been and remains a clinical diagnosis made by somebody with expertise in that area. Some people go to certain type of clinics which provide brain scans and other fancy tests, for instance, full neuropsychological testing, etc., which can cost in the thousands and are not the standard of diagnostic assessment for ADHD. It remains a clinical diagnosis. Sometimes neuropsych testing can help. The cost of that, you know, again, it can be quite expensive if you don't have insurance, unfortunately, and people who don't have insurance it's very difficult to be evaluated and to get proper evaluation and treatment. Your second point, you know, one of the books I was going to mention that I would, you know, recommend for people who want to read more about this is You Mean I'm Not Lazy, Stupid, or Crazy by Halliwell. And it's very common where people with ADHD will have grown up feeling that they're stupid, lazy, and a variety of other negative attributes that they give themselves, that their parents, give them, and that other people in their lives give them because of school failure, other types of failure socially, and it's really growing up a lot of times with some negative karma going, and I can't obviously say whether what your level of intelligence is ADHD, we'll just leave it there.
And now again, the book is titled You Mean I'm Not Crazy or Lazy, Stupid, or Crazy.
Right. I'll read the whole thing. You Mean I'm Not Lazy, Stupid, or Crazy? The classic self-help book for adults with ADHD by Halliwell. And he's one of the psychiatrists who also wrote fairly well-known book on ADHD called Driven to Distraction that's been around for 10 or 15 years now.
Is Halliwell's name spelled?
It's Halliwell.
Okay. I hope this helps, John, and I hope you get a copy of that book, or if you can afford it, to get in and talk to some professionals.
Right. I actually have a follow-up. It actually has more to do with the specifics of who to call. You had suggested the Department of Psychology. The reason that I ask about that...
Psychiatry,
okay.
Right.
The reason that I asked that is that I'd gone to someone when I was living in Missouri. I'd gone to see someone, and he was quite helpful. Recommended Ritalin, which I didn't find helpful.
Mm-hmm.
And he ended up leaving in mid-treatment for me. And the person that I went to following him really was not very helpful and actually mocked me because I was seeking, a medication or something to help with, completing paperwork and whatever else I needed to do at my job. And that really, I had absolutely no desire following that to pursue, medication or even seeing anybody about assistance.
Yeah.
There certainly remains a stigma in the, all the way from the public to the medical, to the psychological, to the mental health world some of these disorders we're talking about, ADHD, and the medications used to treat them. They are the stimulants we're talking about, again, and methylphenidate, Ritalin, Adderall, amphetamine, and the stimulants are controlled substances and can and have been and will continue to be abused and misused by some people. The evidence is fairly clear, though, that people with ADHD who are treated have are less likely to abuse illicit substances than their counterparts who are who are not treated, and less likely than the general public to have substance use problems.
So Ritalin isn't the only answer, nor is one specific person, a caretaker, that he might have had right. problems with. You'd certainly recommending someone else and giving it another try.
Right, absolutely. One other important point, I think, is that a trial on these medications and failure on a medication or a success on a medication doesn't mean that you have ADHD or don't. That shouldn't be the test of whether you have the disorder. Any human being who takes one of these medications, many will have increased alertness, increased ability to pay attention, and that's why many of these medications are misused in the public and on college campuses, and we see that here, unfortunately. Being on a medication and not responding to it or responding to it doesn't mean you have ADHD. For all we know, you may not have responded to that medication. The dose may have been too low. There may have been some other type of problem going on that, you know, where you didn't have ADHD.
Okay.
All right. Well, thank you.
Thank you, Don.
Thanks very much for calling. And John in La Crescent, Minnesota, it's your turn. Hi, John.
Hey, good morning, gentlemen. I guess we're segueing a little bit into, some of my questions revolve around the chemical properties of the class of drugs to treat ADHD. And what my original question was, can you speak to comorbid conditions such as a major depressive disorder coexisting with an ADHD? And I imagine that'd be a difficult diagnosis, much less difficult for the individual. But so if you could tell me, I guess, if sometimes the drugs are working maybe on the same neurotransmitters and that kind of thing.
Sometimes it can go both ways. That first of all, you're absolutely right. There's we psychiatrists use the word comorbidity, and really that what that means is coexisting. And people who have ADHD have been shown to have a high level of anxiety disorders coexisting, of mood disorders, depression, bipolar disorder coexisting, a higher than normal level of other mental health disorders as well, substance use disorders. Again, people who are untreated. Sometimes it's very difficult to ascertain the typical chicken or the egg question. Unfortunately, anxiety disorders and mood disorders can cause problems with concentration and focus. And you really need to say, is this, primarily a major depressive episode that's causing someone to not be able to focus, or is it more of has it been a lifelong problem and maybe in the realm of ADHD? They can coexist sometimes. A mood or anxiety disorder or other mental health disorder can cause attentional problems, but also the reverse can be true, that people with ADHD who have had a long-standing difficulties with in social and academic settings can have low self-esteem and negative thoughts about themselves and are more apt to develop depression and anxiety problems. Mm.
Thank you very much for calling. And Jeff, thank you so much for being with us today. If people wanted to find out more, is there a good website for ADHD?
Well, I would probably go to as simple as this, add.org is a real good website. And there's obviously references. You can go out from that website to find other resources.
And the other book you mentioned, You Mean I'm Not Lazy, Stupid, or Crazy by Halliwell,
right,
is another good source.
One other one is called Scattered Minds by Adler, is another good book on ADHD.
Thank you so much for being with us.
Oh, sure. Thanks for having me, Larry.
Appreciate it very much. Dr. Jeff Anders, clinical professor of psychiatry at the UW-Madison Health Services, our guest today. We'll have him back and we'll talk again. Coming up, we're going to be talking about preventing and treating skin cancers or carcinoma. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.